Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
I would say this. I don't know if we're the best in everything, but the one area that I'd put us up against anybody in the country is our player development. You know, and if guys stick it out and they put their best foot forward day in and day out, they're going to get better.
Welcome back to another episode of Not Even D2. We got a great episode for you guys where we talk with associate head coach for Santa Clara's men's basketball team, Jason Ludwig. Really our guy, a great conversation we had with him. Before we get into that, talk to me, bro. How you? What's going on over there in Utica? You just getting back, so what's going on?
Had a little nice fall break, bro. Just spent time with my pops. You know, we grabbed dinner. We was in New Hampshire for a little bit. It was a nice little reset for the rest of the semester. How was your weekend, bro?
Weekend was cool. Too much traveling. City to Rochester to see Shorty, then Rochester to Troy for half a day, then back to the city. So not, I don't even count that as a break for real, just sitting in a bus, but well needed time with everybody. I just mentioned fam and Shorty, but like I said, this is a good episode with Coach Ludwig. We talked about a lot with him, his experience at different high major schools, UCLA, Santa Clara, like battling with that. That letdown of kind of getting let go from a school you want to spend the rest of your life at. It was just a really good conversation. We talk about J-Dub. What you think about this episode?
Definitely a great conversation with Coach Ludwig. You know, the conversation with J-Dub was, I know you had a great time that whole time talking about, you know, J-Dub. And no, it was a great, you know, just talking about his career. Obviously, you know, he's Latino and, you know, you could talk to someone, you know, some a Latino in that space and be able to connect with them, the coaching space. You always love to see stuff like that. And he's actually the co-founder of the LA Latino Association of Basketball Coaches, which is awesome. That's really one of the main things. You know, obviously we wanted to talk about his Santa Clara experience in UCLA, but that was one of the main things that I wanted to talk to him about. And we had a great conversation, bro. It was a great conversation. And I'm really glad that I got to connect with him. He's going to be someone that, you know, I keep, you know, I stay in contact with, and I'm excited to watch some Santa Clara basketball because, you know, they have a really great program over there too.
Yeah, 100%, bro. It was a good conversation. Like, as a non-Latino, it was just cool just seeing y'all bond over that stuff. We talk, I'm not going to spoil too much of the conversation, but it was cool just hearing, like, why he keeps that going, what importance it has around, like, the basketball community. We talked about skill development in the episode with Santa Clara, and this is my last point before we get into the conversation. But, like, it's not like once in a while they have good players at Santa Clara. Like, their skill development and how they get guys to buy into their system and become, like, the best versions of themselves is a real thing. Like, any player that lands in the WCC outside of Gonzaga and ends up in the NBA, like, that's crazy development in itself. But to do that with multiple players in the last few years, with Brandon Pajemski, who's on the Warriors now, lottery draft pick, and then also obviously Jalen Williams on the Thunder. Like, we talked about Dub, but like both of them, like Brandon Pajemski started at Illinois and was barely playing on that team. And then he gets to Santa Clara and is player of the year. So like the way that they actually get guys into their program to believe in themselves and then make like a long-term career. Both of them are stamped in the league now, all because like a great Santa Clara experience. And it's not just those two. Like, they've had five straight years of a player being on WCC first team. So their talent is super special. And I know they have a lot of newcomers this next year, but the expectations are still high in my head or for that program because, like, they have a great coaching staff. And Coach Lovick is a great coach. It was a good conversation. I'm not going to spoil too much more. Let's get into the conversation. All right, we are here with Coach Ludwig. How you doing today, Coach?
I'm good. KJ Nuru, thank you so much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Of course, Coach. Definitely excited to get you on the pod. It's going to be a great episode, Coach. But, you know, I want to hear a little something about California. That's where you were born and raised. You're coaching in California right now as well. And I'm heading out to LA in October for the first time. I've never been on the West Coast. And I know Santa Clara is in NorCal, but, you know, you grew up in East LA. So tell me some spots I got to hit. Tell me where I got to go. I got to hear all that, Coach.
Well, yeah. So, you know, the funny thing about California is, yeah, like NorCal and SoCal could almost be different states. You know, they're very different. And they both have great qualities. They both have great things about them. You know, I've been in NorCal now for 10 years, but grew up in SoCal. And both are great places, but they're very different. LA is a great place to visit. It's a lot of fun. There's a lot going on. It's very spread out. So I think you kind of got to decide, all right, you know, I'm going to spend this day in this area, the next day in another area. But, you know, I probably wouldn't go back to East LA, you know, maybe for the food, you know, maybe for some good tacos or something. But outside of that, I probably wouldn't, you know, recommend, you know, hanging out there. You know, some of my favorite places in LA, probably my number one spot that I would recommend to anybody is Manhattan Beach. It's my favorite beach. And it's just so beautiful. It's nice. It's, you know, there's good restaurants, small, but good social scene and, good people watching place, beautiful beaches. That's the best. That's my favorite place. It's kind of its own little pocket hidden away. Mm. But you know, outside of that, hit the normal spots. You go to Santa Monica, very tourist space area by the beach. That's always fun. You know, hang out in Hollywood. Can't go wrong there. There's a lot of great restaurants. West Hollywood, really good restaurants. Probably some of the best restaurants in LA are in that area. The best nightlife, right? You probably want to hit up a club at least once to say you did it in Hollywood, right? I think if you hit those three spots, I think you have done LA right. And then if you have extra time, then you know you might even want to make your way down to Orange County. There's also some really nice beaches down there, whether it's you know, Newport Beach or Laguna Niguel. So, you know, those types of places are really, really nice.
Yeah, I know Ruta's gonna have a good trip. I know you mentioned the club. We don't gotta talk too much about that, but I know him and his fam like the beach too. So definitely gotta hit those spots, Coach. So I'm always interested to kind of hear like what coaches' hobbies are outside of basketball. So if you could let us know what you're into or what your hobbies consist of when you're not in the office or grinding basketball work.
Yeah, you know, I would say two things. I would say I love to travel. So anytime there is a downtime or a period where I don't have to be in the office, my wife and I love to travel, and especially to Europe. And so, you know, basketball has taken me all over the world, and it's opened up, you know, just places that I never would have gone on my own before. And because of that, it's allowed me to, you know, see new places and exciting places. And because of that, my wife and I love to travel anytime we have some downtime. So that'd be number one. And then the other thing, that I'm a big wine guy. I love wine. I'm big, you know, a part of our travels always includes some sort of wine tasting. So if we're going to go to Europe, we'll, you know, if we're going to go to France, we'll go to Bordeaux for a few days to go wine tasting. We just got back in June. We were in Spain and we spent some time in Rioja, which is the wine region and the most famous wine region in Spain. And so did some wine tasting out there. So I love traveling the world, enjoying wine from all over the world. Those are probably my two biggest. I like both. You know, it depends on the time of day, the you know, with a meal. If it's a hot summer day, you got to go with some white. But if, you know, I'm having a nice dinner, especially if it's meat or steak, then I got to go with red. So it just varies, but I like it all.
Now, it's kind of interesting, Coach. You talked about basketball allowing you to travel so much, because when I looked at your bio, I think it mentioned how you recruit a lot of international players to Santa Clara. So, I mean, you're 100% right. Basketball is global now.
Yeah. You know, when we took over the job at Santa Clara 10 years ago, you know, we knew that we had to think outside the box. You know, the program had not had great success really, you know, in quite some time. So we knew that we were going to have to mix things up and do things a little differently. And so, you know, we knew that they had previous success with Canadians. So that was one market we were going to tap into. And we've done a really good job recruiting Canadians. We've had some really good players over the years. But the other area that I thought we could maybe differentiate ourselves was in Europe. And so, you know, 10 years ago, I decided that, you know what, we're going to make a concerted effort to recruit that area. So we have a great presence. We spend a lot of time there in the off season, in the summer, recruiting, going to all the FIBA European Championship events, just spending time there, building relationships. And because of that, we've actually had some very good players, yeah. You know, from Europe. Last year we had, a really good player from France, first team all conference. We had a second team all conference guy from Germany. And, you know, and then one of our better returners is Canadian. So we've had good success recruiting internationally.
Yeah, we're definitely going to hit more on the international recruiting later on in the episode. But I'm kind of curious, like, you've been at UCLA and other like high major schools, more specifically, like the location. I'm wondering, like, what's unique about Santa Clara? Because I've heard, like, talking to different people throughout the past few weeks about like Santa Clara, they always say like the location's a little unique. So just talk about that.
Yeah, no, that's a good observation. We're located in an area called the Silicon Valley. And as you may have heard, right, the Silicon Valley is the center of the world for business and technology. Right, you have Apple, Facebook, Google, Twitter, everybody's here. And so because of that, you know, we're right in the heart of it all. And so what I love about Santa Clara is that our student athletes, our students, have direct access to so many powerful and influential people. Hmm. And you just never know. I always like to say success is about proximity. And so if you surround yourself with, you know, just highly motivated, highly successful people, and in part being here in the Silicon Valley, that's going to happen naturally. Well, then you probably can't help but that rubbing off on you and you becoming successful as well. So, you know, the thing I love about Santa Clara most is like, not only are we going to prepare you to be the best basketball player that you can be, but we're also setting you up for life after basketball. And no matter what happens on the court, let's shoot for the stars. Let's help you get to the NBA. But if it doesn't work out, or even if it does, you're going to have an incredible Rolodex of contacts and connections that are going to be able to help you for the rest of your life. And that's something that I'm really proud of about this place. And that's what something that makes this place so unique, being right here in the heart of the Silicon Valley.
It's kind of interesting because if I'm not mistaken, Stanford is in the same like area as Santa Clara, right? Because it's right in Silicon Valley.
Yeah. We're 20 minutes apart. And so we actually, you know, both have very similar, you know, access to the tech companies. I mean, there's probably not a tech company in Silicon Valley that Santa Clara doesn't have some sort of higher up executive that we could get access to.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably helping you guys in recruiting too, because you can recruit a different type of student athlete, right? The high academic student athletes that maybe, you know, wouldn't want to go to like a power five school that, you know, doesn't really has a focus on academics, if you know what I mean. They want to set themselves up for other things. And Santa Clara is obviously offering that. So you love to see that type of environment for sure.
Yeah. You know, you don't have to be a genius to go to Santa Clara, but you just have to care. You know, you have to care. You have to, you know, you got to want to be here. And the type of student athletes that end up coming here are the ones that come from families that really understand that this is bigger than just basketball. That, yeah, we're going to Santa Clara because they have a good basketball program, but they also know that they're going to get that degree that's highly respected and valued, and they're going to get a great, you know, great base of contacts and connections. And it's really it's not a 4-year plan, it's a 40-year plan. Mm.
And to add on to that, the experience, right? Because you hear, you know, we're going to talk about J-Dub and Pods and all them, but they love, when they talk about their Santa Clara experience, They shine a lot of love on Santa Clara, which is dope for sure.
Man, it's incredible. I everywhere you go, you know, sometimes you're on the road recruiting and you're wearing your Santa Clara gear, your polo. Every time I run into a person that has graduated from Santa Clara, it's 100% guaranteed that they had a great experience during their time as a student. And yeah. So it's a special place.
Now that's dope. Definitely, you know, like I said, I'm heading out to Cali for the first time. In October, you know, definitely at some point though, got to take a trip up there. Coach, But, you know, I want to talk about preseason so far for you guys at Santa Clara. If I'm not mistaken, you guys had 5 or 6 seniors graduating the program, and you have about 7 to 8 new players coming in. So kind of a new team, but you guys had a really good year last year, 21-13 NIT appearance. So to talk about preseason so far, what the focus is, the new guys coming in, all that good stuff.
Yeah, yeah, we lost a lot. But we also have, a good number of guys returning, probably more than most college basketball programs. And so even though we lost a majority of the guys that started, we have a good group of guys that, either played minutes or that have been in our program for multiple years that understand the system and understand the expectations. So that helps a lot. Obviously, we do have 7 new players, 8 new players. And so there's a lot of teaching, a lot of learning. And so this summer, we really spent a lot of time, really just teaching, the fundamentals of our offense, the fundamentals of our defense. We always spend a lot of time on skill development. That's the core of our program. But there certainly was, an extra emphasis on the fundamentals of, just our basic principles because we did have a lot of new pieces. But I think that's going to be pretty common moving forward in college basketball because of the way the landscape is. So I think it's something that we just got to get used to and understand that you're probably not going to have ever again a group of guys that have been together for 3 or 4 years, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you adjust and you evolve, and we're prepared for that.
Yeah, I definitely respect that you guys are like understanding that the portal is making things kind of odd with keeping guys in your program. But I also think that, like, to counter your point, that you guys could see, like, you guys are one of the programs that could have a lot of people, like, a good retention in the program because of, like we just talked about, with the Santa Clara degree, the location, all that stuff, and then the success on the basketball court. I could see why guys are like, I'll stick out this journey. Even if I don't play my first 2 years, like, I know that the coaching staff is going to develop me into a great basketball player. I'm going to get a good degree, have the access that we talked about. So just a counter argument, kind of. But
yeah, I would say this. I don't know if we're the best in everything, but the one area that I'd put us up against anybody in the country is our player development. If guys stick it out and they put their best foot forward day in and day out, they're going to get better. They're going to get better, and they're going to become the best versions of themselves. And I think that's why, like you said, guys end up staying here more often than not. Right. I mean, we're not perfect. We're not going to keep everybody. Right. It's just the nature of the game. But I think we are going to keep a higher percentage of guys than maybe a lot of other programs, because guys really know that they're getting better here. And they love it. And they love it here. It's a beautiful place. The weather, the location. We talked about the academics, and so there's a lot to like about this place. So I agree. Yeah, I agree. We are going to, as long as we continue to develop guys, that they're going to, I think they're going to want to stay more often than not.
Yeah, 100%. We got you. You keep like bringing stuff up that we're going to talk about later on in the episode. So let's just stick on target right now. But you recently just got a promotion, I seen, to associate head coach. Shout out to you. Congrats to you. Kind of curious, like, what the moment was like, how you, maybe if you could walk us through that day or signing the contract, how it felt for you. And then also how that kind of changes like your day to day. I know it's probably not much, but if you have any insight into
I mean, I think it was pretty straightforward. We had a staff member leave, and prior to that staff member leaving, we didn't have an associate head coach. All the assistants were equal, and so I've been with coach for 9 years, and so it was just an opportunity that presented itself. Super excited to have it offered to me, and I'm very, very grateful for that opportunity. As far as how it changes my day to day, not really much. It doesn't change much. We actually were able to promote from within. We had some younger guys in our staff and support staff roles and graduate assistant roles that have been with us for several years. And so we were able to elevate all of them up into full-time positions, along with my promotion. So it was really great to be able to, to give them that opportunity as well to get on a full time on a Division I coaching staff. I know a lot of it was a lot of their goals and dreams to make that happen. So I was just happy that that opportunity not only helped myself, but really helped our entire coaching staff and helped guys elevate and continue to advance in the business.
No, that's a great answer, Coach. And, you know, a very humble answer, honestly, you know, to become, you know, associate head coach, that's not, as I say to KJ, it's not a little bag at all. It's a huge accomplishment. Thanks. And, you know, it's also interesting too, because I read in your bio that you love to give back to like underprivileged communities and love and always love like, you know, giving back to others and helping create opportunities for others. So just talk about that aspect of, you know, who you are.
Yeah, well, you know, I grew up in East LA and Montebello to be specific. And the reality was there wasn't a lot of opportunity where I grew up. My high school had a 50% dropout rate. Not a lot of kids are going to college. And I was really fortunate to have stayed focused and not only played athletics, but was a very good student. And that was my way out. You know, that was my way out. And I was able to get into a number of universities and decided to go to UCLA. And when I got to UCLA and I started to see how things worked in the real world and just about how a lot of this world is about contacts and connections and relationships and just really giving people opportunity. And then at that point, I realized what little opportunity I had growing up and a lot of the people that I grew up with had, and how a lot of the people, a lot of even friends, didn't make it out because they didn't have the opportunity, made poor choices. They didn't have the right mentors or leaders around them, or just honestly, just people that were advocating for them. And don't get me wrong. I mean, there were some people in my life growing up that were really important that helped me along the way, but nowhere near what other places have. And so when I saw that, I decided that I wanted to do something, whatever it may be at that time, to give back. So for about 15 years straight, I did a free basketball camp in the East LA area. And I'd bring in guest speakers, you know, I'd bring in NBA players, college coaches, you know, anybody that I could get to participate that could send a positive message to the kids to let them know that, hey, listen, like, it's possible, right? It's possible. Like, just because you grew up in this area doesn't mean that college isn't an option, right? Like, it is possible. It is, you can do it. And not only can you do it, you can become really successful. And so I did that for about 15 years and was really proud of the amount of kids that we were able to touch and to be able to participate in our event. And so that was something that was special to me. You know, the other thing that we might get into this later, but the other thing that has always been important to me is my Latino heritage. And so also going to UCLA and then starting my coaching career, there was not very many Latino coaches in the business, right? Very few. And I'll be honest with you, I had people discourage me from coaching. They didn't say it directly. They didn't say because you're Mexican or because you're a 5'9" Mexican from Montebello, but I knew why. You know, I knew why they would say that. Yeah. They would say you should go coach high school. You should just be a junior college coach. It's safer. It's easier. But that's not what I wanted. And so, you know, there was a lot of people that tried to discourage me from it. And you know, luckily I didn't listen. And so because of that journey, I decided that I wanted to start the Latino Association of Basketball Coaches. And I wanted to create this group basically to bring together all Latino coaches to create a support system for each other so that we know that there's others out there that are doing big things, that are coaching at all levels, whether it's, you know, Division I or the NBA, all the way down to high school and grassroots and youth basketball. And actually, I want to share a story because this probably is really defining of why we started the organization. But probably about 7-8 years ago, we got a DM on our LABC Instagram page, and this coach said that he was a high school coach in Texas, and he was the only Latino on the staff, and he had felt really, really discouraged. He just felt like he didn't fit in, he couldn't relate to anybody, and in some ways felt like he was kind of being pushed out. And then he found our LABC page. And he saw all these coaches, Latino coaches, that were having success, that were doing their thing at all levels. And he said, when he saw that, he realized, no, I can do this. I can actually be a part of this. I can be a part of this great game and be a coach. And so when I saw that, I was like, wow, okay, we got to keep going. We got to keep building this thing, because like if we're able to impact just one person like that, then it's worth it.
Sure, that's a super touching answer, Coach, honestly. And you know, like we talked about on the phone, I'm Puerto Rican, and you know, I'm still trying to figure out what I'm trying to do. I'm still doing the coaching thing, doing the media thing, but someone that could be pursuing coaching, seeing someone like yourself, you know, doing big things, coaching NBA players, coaching on ESPN, like it makes me, like you said, feel like it's possible, right? So I got to commend you for that. And we're going to definitely talk more about that, coach, but I want to talk more about this like opportunity aspect of it, right? Because like we mentioned, you're going overseas, you're recruiting international players, and really you're giving them an opportunity to show what they can, you know, in this here in the States. So just talk about that aspect and then how they kind of bring value to college basketball, international players, that is.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really changed here, especially in the last 5 years. And you can just see it in the NBA, right? I mean, I think you look at that statistic of who the NBA MVPs have been in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, and most of them have been international players. Yeah. And so it's truly a global game. And I think that for college basketball, you know, I think we were a little bit ahead of the curve in going out there, which was great because, you know, I think we do a great job in finding undervalued guys, or we go to places where maybe others won't. And I think that's how we've been able to achieve some success. Now it's catching up, right? I don't know if there's as much hidden value in international basketball. I just went to an event where there's probably 150 college coaches there, where, you know, 5 years ago there might be 10. Yeah. And so now it's changing again. So now we have to evolve and we have to adjust, and it's going to change how we operate a little bit too. But I think everybody's kind of caught up now and been like, okay, like there's value over here. But I think international, the value of international players, especially the way that it's a different game, right? You watch a FIBA game, it's much different than watching an AAU game or even a high school game. It's much more centered on team first. So very rarely are you going to see guys that are going to average like a bunch of points, right? There's going to be great ball movement, spacing. They do have a better understanding of team offense and team defensive schemes. So I think from that standpoint, they're ahead of us. I think maybe from the individual skill, you know, we're probably still better. And obviously in terms of athleticism and things like that, I think that's the biggest adjustment that those international players have to make when they come to the U.S. is just the size and athleticism and length that they – and speed of the game, which is much different here than it is overseas. But they do bring great value because of their IQ, their skill, and their propensity to be more team first.
Not for sure. I mean, you know, international players coming in today, like you said, it's not becoming like a new thing. Like, you know, a lot of these coaches, like I know we talked to Luke Barrett on St. Mary's, and you know, it feels like half of his team is from Australia or something like that. So it's definitely interesting to see, you know, the tides change a little bit in college basketball.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's also hurt St. Mary's because, you know, 10 years ago, if there was an Australian, St. Mary's was going to get him. It wasn't even a question. And now if there's a high level Australian, St. Mary's has got to compete with a lot of other programs now. And I mean, they're still getting great players. Don't get me wrong, but I think they would agree that it's not as easy as it was maybe 10 years ago.
Word. Transitioning to a different topic, I want to talk about J-Dub. I'm a big Thunder fan. I've been an OG Thunder fan too. Everybody who knows me knows that. I know you were the lead recruiter and getting him to Santa Clara. So first I want you to just maybe tell a story about recruiting Dub, what that was like, cause he was dominating prep school, Arizona. And then also like the development you've seen through him just like in Santa Clara, even today, you could see his development from year one to year three. Like now he's all NBA, all defense, NBA champion. But just like, because his freshman year, he was like a good player, nothing crazy. Second year, still kind of under the radar. And then his junior year is when he kind of exploded. So just talk about like the development you've seen for him, but first recruiting him, how you got him to Santa Clara.
Yeah, you know, I think it kind of goes back to my comment about finding undervalued talent, right? And so it was going into his junior year, the summer going into his junior year, I was at an event in Los Angeles, and I got to give some credit here to his AAU coach for this reason. I knew of him, right? He was on some lists. So we had him marked down as a young guy that we have to watch at some point. And I was pretty much done for the day. I'd watched all the guys that were a year older, right, that were closer to making their decision. And I was about to walk out of the gym, and his AU coach just jumps out in front of me. He's like, "Hey, coach, you got to watch my young kid. You got to watch my young kid, Jalen." And I said, Jalen who? Jalen Williams. Oh, okay. I was like, all right, yeah, I know of him. Like, let me sit down and watch him. So I sit and I watch that game, and I was the only coach at that court. It was like court, 47 of, in a huge warehouse with, hundreds of teams. And there was like a few parents and me. And so I sat and I watched him, and, to be honest, he was probably 6'1" at most, maybe 6 feet, 6'1". His arms and legs were too big for his body, feet too big for his body, just long and dangly, and like couldn't really, like, he wasn't explosive. Like, he couldn't run and jump, like as like he can now. Mm-hmm. But he had an incredible skill level. He had, like, he played with great pace, and he had a great IQ, and he had like a really nice, like, pro looking jump shot, for that age. And so from that point forward, I was like, okay, like, let's circle this kid. Let's definitely recruit him and let's follow him, 'cause he's really young. And that's really how the recruiting process started. And then from that point, he just continued to grow and improve every year. And, we followed him closely that whole season at Perry High School. He has a great high school coach, Sam Duane, mm-hmm. who just retired, and, a guy that is so well respected in Arizona for developing players over the years. And so we knew that he was coming from a program where he was taught the game at a pretty high level. And he just continued to improve every year. And we, we went after him really hard, and we were fortunate to get him.
Yeah, it's tough. I heard you talk about how, obviously that's one of your guys. You recruited him, spent a lot of time with him throughout the 3 years. And then when he got drafted, it was just like, I think you said, I don't want to put your business, but I think you said you started crying. But it just shows like the tight relationship you guys had. But I'll let you continue talking about his development. I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah. No, I'll be happy to talk about that. It was definitely a proud moment. But Jalen's time at Santa Clara, I would say this about him. Coming into his freshman year, he didn't start. He didn't start. We had some young guards that were pretty talented, and they were starting ahead of him. But to his credit, the reason that he ultimately broke through and got into the starting lineup about 10 games into the season was his defense. He actually was a guy who, like, when he got into the game, he was just so reliable. We would put on the other team's best perimeter player, and he just didn't make mistakes.
I was seeing that he had like 5 steals against Gonzaga as a freshman. Like that might sound okay, you had 5 steals, but that's crazy as a freshman to do that against a high major program. Like, yeah. And he was one of the top steals person in the WCC as a freshman. And now you see him playing like center in the NBA, but it just shows that he's a great defender. You keep talking about it.
Yeah. So he like, that's what got him into the starting lineup, is just, he was so reliable. We just couldn't keep him off the floor because he was just so, he brought so much value on the defensive end. And in his offensive game, like, his defense was ahead of his offense at that time. And I think his freshman year, he averaged about 9 points a game, and didn't shoot great from 3. But, you saw it coming. Like, he just needed time to mature and develop and continue to work. And, honestly, I think he would have exploded earlier, but we had a crazy experience his sophomore year. As you might remember, that was the year that his freshman year was the year that COVID shortened the season right before the NCAA tournament. And then his sophomore year was the season where we actually went, like, played through COVID. Mm-hmm. And so we actually only played like 20 games that year. But Santa Clara County was more strict than any other county in the United States. So they actually banned sports that year or for most of that year in Santa Clara County. So even the 49ers, I think they had to move to Arizona. We had to move to Santa Cruz, which is a town about 40 minutes from our campus. And we lived in a hotel for majority of the season for like 2 to 3 months. And we had access to the Warriors G League facility, but we only had access 2 hours a day for the entire team. So going into that season, we saw Jalen kind of making strides. Like he had moments in practice where, like, wow, like, this guy could explode. He's going to have a chance to have a great season. And then that happened and it just stunted not just him, but everybody's development. Cause now, I mean, how much can you do for 2 hours a day with the entire team with only two hoops? We had two hoops for the whole team for 2 hours a day. That's it. And then you got to go back to your hotel room and you had to stay in the hotel room. You couldn't walk outside. You couldn't do anything. You had to stay in your room. And so we did that for like most of the season. Damn. And so it really stunted, stunted Jalen's progress, where he could have maybe taken a bigger step that sophomore year. So I think if I recall correctly, he averaged like 7 points a game his freshman year and then like 9 points a game his sophomore year. Mm-hmm. You know, but he had moments here and there where you saw it coming, but it didn't happen like it did the next year, right? And then his junior year, we were back normal. He was able to live in the gym. He's a worker. He's disciplined. He works hard. And sure enough, that's when he exploded. And I remember after our first scrimmage, we scrimmaged a high major team, and he was the best player on the floor, and nobody could keep him in front. He was just getting to the basket at will, and I was like, "Wow, okay, this guy's really good." And then the rest is history. Yeah,
yeah. It's like that sophomore season you talked about is all a part of the journey. Like, even though he didn't get to explode that year, it was just another year for him to get in the gym, take his time. Like, because he went through a crazy growth spurt, like you talked about, so it allowed his body to kind of like get used to that growth spurt, get his shot right. And then, like you said, junior year, he just went crazy. And like one thing, I don't know if he was doing this often, but a lot of like people or like media people have been talking about Dub being able to like reach with his long arms, reach over people's bodies to steal their crossover. I was just curious if he was doing that since he was in college.
Yeah, like you don't want to cross over in front of him. You know, he's just so long. He has a 7'2" wingspan. So, you know, if you try to cross over in front of him, like you think that you're going to go by him or you're not going to get it taken. And he just like puts his arm out and pokes it away. It's crazy.
I love watching his film when he does that, for sure. But we talked about how like you got, this will be the last thing before we take a quick break, but you talked about how you guys are like a top of the country in player development. And I was talking to Luke Bear off air just about like your program. He said one thing is definitely like your guys' player development is special. It's like every year you guys are just developing guys to a very high level, maximizing their talent. So I'm just curious what your duty in that is, or what the program does to kind of like develop these guys. If you want to talk about a story with Dub, how you guys got him to the point he was, or any player really, but just talk about the player development process in the program.
I mean, I think it's two things. I think one is there has to be an emphasis on it. And so, you know, in this, I will speak on this in the summer, in the off season. I mean, we're spending a disproportionate amount of time on individual skill development, whereas maybe other programs are working on shell defense and working on, you know, running their plays and different things like that. Like we're taking our guys one, two or three guys at a time and just working on skill development. And so there's certainly a premium on that in our program. You know, we just spend a disproportionate amount of time, especially in the off season, helping our guys improve in that department. And then I think the other part is during the season, it doesn't stop. Even though we have practice, we are still finding time to get guys in the gym to work on their skill development. And so I don't think it's anything, you know, it's not, we haven't reinvented the wheel, but we certainly have put a premium on putting our time into skill development. And then the other part is, I think when you do that, you create a culture of guys that want to be in the gym, right? They get excited because they're improving. Like when you start seeing progress and you're getting better, well, it's exciting to get in the gym. And so, you know, not only do I think us coaches help our players get better, but then at the end of the day, you got to get in the gym yourself too. And you got to do even more above and beyond whatever is required in our practice or skill development session. So I think we've created a culture where guys love being in the gym and they want to get in there on their own time above and beyond what they're doing with us. So I think it goes hand in hand with those two aspects.
Yeah, 100%. The thing is, most coaches talk about how in the summer, like, yeah, they want their players to develop, but once it gets into the season, and kind of like we, they don't say this outright, but they kind of say like, we want them to be in a box, like only do what we're going to, how you're going to play in our system. But you're saying like, even during the season, we want you to continue working on different things, get your craft better and better. So you can see why you guys are a top of the country with player development. But
well, to speak on KJ, to speak on that, just real quick, one more comment on that. And I think the reason why it works is because our style of play is very much a pro style of play. And so we're working on things that are within our offense, but there are things that translate at the highest levels, whether it's in the NBA or FIBA, European basketball, like it translates because of the way we're playing. So a lot of the skill development things that we're implementing on a daily basis, it's stuff that's translatable to the highest levels of basketball. So I think, you know, we've been told often that NBA scouts really like evaluating our players because of our style of play. They can see how it translates to the next level.
Special for sure. But stay with us while we take a quick break.
All right, we are back. Not even D2 here with Coach Ludwig. So, Coach, looking at your bio, you've been around NBA talent. You know, we talked about the Santa Clara years, but really, I feel like your whole life, because, you know, I read online that you coach an AAU team that had Klay Thompson and Paul George on it. And then you were at UCLA two different times, but had a couple of different pros over there, you know. And I want to talk about a certain group of pros: Jordan Farmar, Darren Collison, Russell Westbrook, three guards that, and you were the assistant video coordinator while they were there.
When Jordan was there, Jordan and I were actually students together. I was a senior when he was a freshman. I was a manager there. Then I was a GA for 2 years when Darren and Russell were there. Then I left for 2 years, and then I came back as the assistant or the video coordinator, director of scouting and player development. And then that's when we had like Kyle Anderson and Shabazz Muhammad and Jordan Adams and Norman Powell. We had some great players as well. So, it was a good run.
So now surrounded by talent, but kind of the same idea we talked about with J-Dub and, you know, about seeing undervalued talent, because, you know, I know that Westbrook coming out of high school, he wasn't like a highly rated recruit, I don't think, coming out of LA. So just talk about the clear potential that all those players had at, you know, such a young age.
Well, I think, you know, obviously I can't take credit for recruiting any of those guys, but I certainly was around, during their careers and even during some of the recruiting processes. So I think the lesson that it taught me was, how to evaluate great players, right? Because I got to see from start to finish how these guys were recruited, how they were developed, and how they ultimately left the program and went on to become great NBA players. And so it was an incredible, valuable lesson for me because it taught me what it looks like, right? And I saw, okay, like what is, and not just the physical attributes, but also the mental attributes of what it takes to be successful at that level. So I think that really helped me early in my career because I got to see, okay, this is what it looks like to recruit and develop a player of this caliber. And if obviously those guys were all very talented players, like Jordan Farmar was McDonald's All-American. Maybe Darren and Russell were kind of those look slightly undervalued guys. But if I have to, I always say this, like if I had to share one characteristic that all these guys that make it have, it's their discipline, right? It's their discipline. They have this pro-like discipline, even in college. Right. And it doesn't mean that they don't like want to have fun and be a college student, but there's a limit to that fun, and nothing gets in the way of their dream and their pursuit of being an NBA player. And that's something that really stands out. And it's not just those guys, but other guys like, you know, Ryan Hollins and Aaron Aflalo and Lukumba Mute. And I mean, we had so many great players during that run, and it's incredible, like all those guys that made it, they all had a certain discipline about them. And so I would say the biggest lesson that I learned during that time was, you know, how do I identify that, how to cultivate that, and how to develop that.
Right. The discipline is like you're saying in a basketball lens, but that's for everybody in life. Like you don't see business owners or the top of the top wealth, people with money, with lack of discipline. Like their start to a great career is they have the foundation of discipline. So it's something that kind of you need to grow if you want to be successful in life. So I definitely understand that. And you talked about like the run you guys had at UCLA, and there was a lot of games won, a lot of great players. It was almost like a hub. If you want to get to the NBA, like, you might want to check out UCLA. But I want to talk about one specific situation. So I think it was the 2013 season. You guys won the Pac-12, and then you lost in the first round of the tournament. But like a few days after, the whole staff got released. And I know there was like some stories being put out about was Ben Howland, about like some of the, I don't want to say what he was doing, but what was going on at UCLA. But just talk about that situation of a successful year winning Pac-12 and then right after getting fired.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that was disappointing. And the tough part was, and I don't know, people may not remember this, but we made it to the Pac-12 conference championship game.
Against Oregon, and, right?
Against Oregon. Right. And in the semifinal game against Arizona, we actually won that game. We had just beat Arizona for the third time that season, which, as you know, is in the Pac-12, beating Arizona three times is an incredible accomplishment.
Yeah.
But on the last play of the game, one of our best players, Jordan Adams, went up to contest the potential game tying or game winning shot from Arizona, and he came down and broke his foot. And so Jordan was unavailable for us in the conference championship game and in the NCAA tournament. And we had a great team, doing it wrong, but he was very important. So we didn't have one of our better players available. So we ultimately lost in the first round of the NCAA tournament, and yeah, we were fired. And obviously for me, it was extra tough because, I mean, UCLA was my heart. It was my alma mater. I'm from LA. I grew up loving UCLA. Ever since that 95 national championship team, it was my dream to go there. Not only did I get a chance to go to school there, but I had a chance to coach there, and I had spent 10 years up to that point. And so, man, I was living my dream. And so to be let go was one of the toughest moments in my career. But as I look back on that experience, it was probably one of the best experiences for me because it took me out of my comfort zone. And it made me have to grow as a person and as a coach and look for new opportunities and meet new coaches and get into new coaching circles. And so as tough as it was to go through it in that moment, I remember my girlfriend, who's now my wife. I mean, she'll still remember. I think that the next day after we got fired, I think I stayed in bed until 3 p.m. just depressed with no lights on, just like, so disappointed. And we still talk about that. But like I said, it ended up being a blessing in disguise, and it just opened up new opportunities for me and new doors. And so, I wouldn't be here where I am now without having gone through that process.
Now, a lot of people talk about just growing through failure and, you know, or loss, whatever it may be. And it seems like with you, like, that's what you had to do. You really had no choice at that point. Like, you had to grow, and you had to, like you said, be put in an uncomfortable situation in order to, like you said, be where you are today. And that's super dope to hear, Coach, honestly.
Yeah, no, thank you. No, there's no question about that. I like how you said that. You got to be put under uncomfortable situations to grow.
Yeah, for sure. And if I'm not mistaken, too, the Latino Association of Basketball Coaches, it was created in 2011 or founded, if I'm not mistaken, right? So 2011, and then they let you go in 2013. So you had just started a foundation and then you got let go. Like, what type of pressure? You already kind of talked about that mindset, but what was that like, you know?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't even think I was thinking about that at that point. I was thinking about, yeah, how am I going to stay in this business? But I think like when we first started that organization, I got to give a couple shout outs because, you know, I think these two people in particular were really instrumental in keeping it going. One of them is Sergio Rocco, who's a former D1 head coach. I think he was the first Latino D1 head coach in college basketball history. And I remember him coming to one of the early meetings along with Coach Frank Martin, who's, you know, he's our, you know, our godfather in Latino basketball.
Yeah.
But those two guys came to one of the first couple meetings when it was like, I don't know, there might have been seven of us in the room. And they, you know, they each gave speeches that were really motivating and talked about how this was needed, that people have tried to do it before, but have weren't successful, weren't consistent with it. And it just ended up falling by the wayside and nothing came of it. So I always remember those two guys talking in those early meetings, and it motivated me during times when, even to this day, when I get overwhelmed and I feel like, man, like how can I keep running this organization when I have my own job to do and have all these other things going on? But I always think back to those moments when they talked about how important this is and how this is really going to help impact so many people. So I think because of those guys, it's kept me motivated to continue running this organization. And then I was really fortunate also to have some great board members. Early on, Lucas Ramirez, who's a high school coach in Arizona, Omar Sanchez, who's a principal here in the Bay Area, and Gabe Lazo, who's at Tennessee women's basketball assistant coach, Dario Frias, who's an assistant with UC Santa Barbara women's basketball. I mean, they're just an incredible support system and able to get things done and help me out and just take some of the pressure off of me. So I got to give them a big shout out too.
No, I mean, the association itself, like it's a dope thing, and it's allowing, like you said, Latino coaches to connect with each other. And you're big on networking and creating connections. And a connection that I made through through the association was with Coach Placetas. And I talked to him. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
He's a good coach.
Yeah, great coach. And I connected with him like in May, and it's just one example of like just that. How important like that Latino Association of Basketball Coaches is, because it really allows all of us to network with each other and meet each other in an industry where we don't really see a lot of each other, honestly.
Yeah, I learned early in this business that it's all about relationships. And one thing that I'm really proud that we've created is like a brotherhood and sisterhood in this organization. And like what's so awesome now is like when I go on the road recruiting or anywhere I go, and we all see each other, like we all know each other, we dap each other up, we talk, we know, you know, it's like, it's a brotherhood, right? Like we know each other, like we go to dinner together. I was just in Omaha at an event, at a recruiting event. And we had a great dinner with myself, Lucas Ramirez, who's on our board, Frank Martin, Chuck Martin, assistant at Arkansas, and Jorge Sands, who's at Gonzaga. And we had this dinner, and we just had told stories the whole night, drank some wine. I mean, we had the best time. We're just, you know, Coach Martin was just holding court, talking, you know, telling us all these incredible stories throughout his career. And, you know, me and Jorge were just talking smack back and forth, you know, because he's at Gonzaga. And so it was just awesome. It was great. And so that's something that I'm really proud of, is that we created this brotherhood. And I think that because of that, it's going to be able to help people.
No, the Latino community is special. I've seen it like through Ruta. Like when I see I'm black, but when I see a black person, it's like, all right, I got respect for you, like same color or whatever. But when Ruta sees a Latino, it's like your family, like give me a hug type thing. So I always respected that when I see that.
Well, I think blacks and Latinos have like so much in common, right? Like a lot of our culture is based around like family, food, and music. And so I think that's why we can relate to each other so well.
Yeah, facts. But one other thing that I believe you created was the Final Four social thing. That you created that? Am I wrong in saying that?
Yeah. So, man, this was a long time ago, probably back in like 2008 or nine, maybe. So we would go to the Final Four, and we would, you know, me and my closest friends in coaching, and we'd all like hit each other. Hey, where are you guys at? Let's all get together. Like, and it just was chaos because everybody was doing all these different things, and it was hard to get everybody into one room together. So we decided, all right, hey, let's get a couple sponsors. Let's rent out a bar or a restaurant, and let's just invite all of our coaching friends to attend. And so we did that. And so like the first one we ever did was in Detroit. And I don't remember the year. It was like 08 or 09, something like that, whatever the Final Four in Detroit was. And through a couple of relationships, we ended up having like Bruce Pearl show up and, you know, a couple heavy hitters. And we had about 50 coaches attend, which was like really good for our first year. And then from that point forward, it just exploded. And it honestly kind of became like one of the marquee events of the Final Four. And we called it the Young Coaches Social because we were all in our 20s. And we wanted it to be like, because at that time, if you didn't have connections and you didn't know people, like you really had nowhere to go. Like there was the Adidas party that was like a really hard ticket, couldn't get into that. And then there was like search firm things and AD things, but you had to be like a head coach or someone really in the know to be invited to that. So we were really one of the first events for just young coaches just trying to network and trying to connect and meet people and advance in the business. And so we had a run of about, I don't know, 12 years, maybe longer. And we were getting 300 coaches every year at the event. So we stopped doing it probably like 5-6 years ago because I'm not young anymore. And we try to call it the Young Coaches Social, and then we changed it to like the Coaches Social. But then it's like it just got too much. But we had a great run. We had a great run. And I think it's so funny too, because I'll still run into people and be like, hey, I used to come to your event, and they're like ADs now or head coaches. And so it's so cool to see that. I literally was just, yeah, like last year at the Final Four, I connected with an AD at a Division I school. And he's like, oh, I remember you. I used to come to your Young Coaches Social when I was like the SID at this school.
It's crazy. It's like you said, it's all about networking though and creating those communities. And, you know, I think they still like run like a similar type of event at the Final Four, some type of coaches thing. And, you know, I've been told to check it out, you know, numerous times. People tell me like, yo, that's the way to get a job is go over there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we were like the first one. And then once we did it, everybody started copying us. And so
everything is,
but it's fine. Right. Like that's the, you know, you know, you gotta be flattered when people copy your concept, because it was a good one. And now there's so many other events now going on at the Final Four for young coaches to connect and network. And so like, I'm all for it. I think it's amazing. I think it's great. And like you said, I definitely would recommend any young coach going to those things to network.
For sure. For sure. You know, this is our last question too, before we have rapid fire and starting five coach. It's been a great episode though with you. Definitely been a great time connecting with you. And, you know, I'm wondering, we kind of talked about it a little bit, the lack of Latino coaches within maybe, you know, college basketball, high school basketball, whatever it is, just the lack of us. And I'm honestly interested, you know, next coming months, I haven't told KJ this, but talking to you, like I might have to do like a study or something on it, because, you know, you really don't see it too many of us. So talk about the growth, you know, that you foresee for Latino coaches within basketball and, you know, how we can improve overall.
Yeah, I mean, I think the number one thing is like the more people, the more Latinos that we have in leadership positions, the more we have an opportunity to grow, right? And so the more ADs, the more head coaches, you know, administrators in high positions, right? Assistant coaches at the highest level, guys in the NBA. I think like if we can continue to promote those people, then maybe this next generation will be inspired and motivated to say, hey, listen, I can do what they're doing, you know? And so I think that's where it starts, right? Like if we can, like, I think we've created a platform to honor these people, to showcase them. And then hopefully that's going to inspire the next generation. And I think the other thing that we need to do is just, we need to help each other, right? We just need to help each other. Like if there's someone qualified and you have an opportunity to, and you have the opportunity to hire somebody, and then you know, it's about relationships. I mean, that's how the business works. So we've got to help each other any way that we can. So I think that's the other part is, you know, just being able to help each other. But I think the only way you help each other is if you know each other, right? And I think that's what this organization has been able to do, is to create this network of people that is getting to know each other. And I think that will hopefully organically help grow the organization and help grow more coaches, Latino coaches in basketball.
Not for sure. Like you said, like just seeing someone like ourselves, like on that big stage, is going to inspire the next generation. And, you know, to add on to that, you connecting everyone together is going to help even more. Like, you know, I didn't catch his name, but like I saw someone on the staff was Latino at Illinois. Like small things like that is like, damn, I never would have thought that. Like, wow, like, that's cool. Like I gotta connect with that person. You know what I mean? So
yeah, Orlando Antigua, and he's a great coach. Yeah,
shout out to him. So it's definitely cool, coach, and you know, you deserve a lot of praise for starting that for sure. But it's been a great episode, like we talked about. We have rapid fire now. You ready for rapid fire, coach?
All right, let's do it.
All right, so first rapid fire question. You've been in a couple of different locker rooms, different characters and stuff like that. So I got to hear, who is the funniest player from UCLA that you coach, and who's been the funniest player from Santa Clara that you coach?
Oh, man. Dang. Funniest player. Let's see. I'm trying to think back to my UCLA days. Like, who is the funniest guy? Man, we had a lot of serious guys as I'm thinking about this.
Them boys are just focused on getting to the league.
Facts. Yeah, yeah.
Just give us one from Santa Clara.
Santa Clara. Let's see. Funniest from Santa Clara. You know, maybe we had a young man by the name of Jaden Bediako. And he's a big man. And he just had like this very quirky personality, you know, and because of that, he was really funny. And he just was like, he was different, right? He was into like history and all these different things. And, you know, just because of his quirky personality, you know, he just made everybody laugh. You know, he was just fun to be around, right? Like he had a great personality. He would engage with you. He would talk, and, you know, and because of his quirky personality, like you just would always be laughing around him. So that's one guy that kind of comes to mind. And, you know, UCLA, I don't know. That's a tough one. I'm not prepared. I wasn't prepared for that one.
All good. Hey, that's rapid
fire. If it comes to me, I'll answer it later.
Not all good, coach. We appreciate it. Next rapid fire question. What is your favorite road trip to go on in the WCC?
I mean, for me, it's LA because that's where I'm from. And so I know that when we go to LA and play LMU, Pepperdine, or even San Diego, that I'm going to have like, you know, 20 family members there. So for me, that's always the best, but selfishly, because I have a chance to see all my family and friends.
For sure. Next and last rapid fire question I got for you. Another kind of travel question. Obviously, you're recruited in a couple of different countries. So what is your favorite international city that you've been in?
Ooh, now for recruiting or just personally?
We'll say both. You cool with that, KJ?
For sure.
So I think for recruiting, it's probably, you know, either Barcelona or Belgrade, Serbia. And the main reason for that is because those are such big basketball hubs. And that's where the majority of like agents and, you know, teams and basketball people. And so anytime you go into one of those cities, you're going to be able to connect with so many basketball people. So I would say for basketball, definitely Barcelona or Belgrade, Serbia. Personally, if I had to pick what's my favorite city, I wouldn't say city, but I'll say area, is the south of France. And so that's my favorite. On the beach, the water, you know, Cannes is an amazing city. It's like Beverly Hills on the water. But it's getting a little too crazy now, maybe a little too expensive. You know, 5-6 years ago, it was still, you know, reasonable. It's kind of getting out of control now, but it's pretty amazing, that area. Just beautiful water, great restaurants, food, good scene. That's my favorite.
That's awesome, for sure. We got to end this episode with a starting five edition. So if you're a coach assembling a lineup, point guard through center, who's your lineup going to be? And this edition is going to be the best WCC players through the last decade. So when you've been at Santa Clara, and you can include Santa Clara players, but I don't want a whole Santa Clara lineup.
No, okay. No, yeah. No, I'm actually prepared for this question.
All right, let's do it.
I do a little research on this one. All right, so here's my starting lineup. And this is kind of based on, you know, personal experience, preparing for those opponents, playing against them, right, and how dominant they kind of were, you know, during our time coaching against them. So my point guard is going to be Jordan Ford from St. Mary's.
Mm-hmm.
Although, man, that was the hardest one because I could have went so many different
ways
with that one. I mean, like, there's probably 5 or 6 other dudes that could have easily picked. But I just went with Jordan Ford because, I mean, he was pretty dominant during his time in the WCC. My starting two guard is Brandon Pajimski. You can't fault me for that one.
Not at all.
WCC player of the year, right? My three is Jalen Williams, J Dub. I mean, that's easy. You can't deny that one either. My four man is Chet Holmgren.
Mm-hmm.
And my five man is Drew Timmy.
Mm, that's a good lineup. So we got Santa Clara, Gonzaga, and St. Mary's top three schools in WCC too. That's definitely a good lineup. When we talked with Luke Barrett, he tried to say Chet wasn't in his top five.
Oh man, that's tough to say. I mean, as a freshman, that dude was. I mean, the things he did, not just it was defensively that did it for me. I mean, his length. I mean, the way he would just erase baskets, if he was anywhere around the rim, guys were hesitating, pump faking. Even in the NBA, he does that. But can you imagine in college? I mean, it was unreal.
Yeah.
What did Luke Barrett say?
It was just through his career. I forgot what it was, but
he said Eli Scott was over Chet in his top five.
Oh, no way. No way. Eli Scott was a good player, but no way.
I think his reason was Eli Scott gave St. Mary some trouble one year and Chet didn't have his stuff that game. So he was like a little biased on it. But
that's as a coach, you have the luxury of like watching so many games in preparation for opponents, whereas a player, you're just all you really know is like that one game when you play against them. So I can see that.
Yeah.
And Eli Scott was a good player. I mean, he had some great games. There's no question. He beat us one year. It had like 35 in the game. So,
but that's going to do it for another episode of Not Even D2. It's been a really good conversation. Happy to get you on the pod, and Ruta and I got to get out, have a glass of wine with you one of these days.
Hey, happy to share a glass of wine with you guys. Anytime you guys make it to the Bay, please hit me up. Happy to connect with you guys.
Appreciate that. Have a good one.
All right. Thanks, guys.
That'll do it for our conversation with Coach Ludwig. Definitely a good episode. Let me hear your final thoughts.
Final thoughts, man. Shout out Coach Ludwig for, you know, like we mentioned in the beginning, for getting on the podcast. You know, he's, like I said, founder of Latino Association of Basketball Coaches. And one thing I won't forget about what he said is just being able to uplift each other, you know, as Latinos within the space, you know, people of color in general, just supporting each other, uplifting each other, and, you know, helping give opportunities to the next person, right? And that's the one thing I won't forget, you know, ever really after he told me that. And, you know, I'm super tapped in on Santa Clara basketball, you know, 7 straight winning seasons, I think, you know, from them the last couple of years. So, and like you said, they have a lot of new players that are coming in. So I'm really excited to see what they do this year. And I hope everyone enjoyed the episode.
Yeah, facts. So Coach Ludwig's been he just got the associate nod, but I don't think it's like too far away from when he's getting his own program to lead, because he's like, you could tell just by how he speaks, he knows the game. He's able to recruit. He's able to develop players. So those are big check boxes that's already being checked under his resume. But then like Santa Clara, they continue winning. He's now associate. So it's just like tapping on that door. I'm not even sure if he wants to be a head coach in his future, but I could definitely see that coming in the next few years. If Santa Clara has like a good next 2-3 years winning the WCC like they've been doing. But yeah, I just thought it was a really good conversation. Happy to get Coach Ludwig on the show, connect with him. We got another banger dropping next Thursday. Make sure you tap into that. Make sure you go catch Duncan Robinson's episode released a few weeks ago. Kerry Moore, Harvard Women's Basketball. We got top guests all the time. You know the vibes. Go subscribe to us. Go follow us at Not Even D2. And we'll see you next week.